Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Porter. Today's guest is Matt Amelian. Matt is a contributor to Pistols Firing, and you can find him on Twitter at Matt Amelian. Today, he comes on to talk a little bit about the Mississippi State game in week one, and then some of our picks for the Big 12 season. So thank you guys for listening. As always, you guys can find the podcast on pistolsfiringblog.com. And also on iTunes, if you search Pistols Firing Podcast. Last week, we actually got up to, I believe, the top 120 sports podcasts on iTunes, which was really cool. So you guys keep downloading, tell your Oklahoma State friends, and let's try to crack the top 100. Thanks again. Okay, Matty Amelian, welcome back to the podcast. Third week in a row. It's good to have you back on.
Thanks, Ben. Happy game week.
Yeah, happy game week to you. It's finally here. It feels like we've been saying that college football was almost here since like the British Open or something. It feels like it's been a long it's been a long time coming for this week to finally get here.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like the first game is only 3 days away. It's like we build it up, but it doesn't even start to really feel like it until the actual day games start.
Yeah, it's true. Are you going to watch the South Carolina game on Thursday night?
Yeah, I will be coming back. I'll be on the road a lot, get back home. Lindsay told me that she has plans with some friends for dinner that night, and I was just so disappointed that I have to sit at home and watch college football all by myself.
Yeah, that's pretty devastating. There's a late game that night, too. Is it, I want to say USC?
Hawaii?
Is it USC Hawaii?
I don't know. I'm not sure. I may have just thrown that out there, but
no, I think that sounds right. You know, it'll be. I feel like there will be so much overreaction and so many tweets, and I feel like there's going to be like 1,000 articles to read about the South Carolina game once it's over with, because everybody's just dying for it to get here.
Yeah, no, that's going to be the one to watch this weekend.
Yeah, it definitely is. The late Thursday game is USC Hawaii. That's on CBS Sports Network, though, so I actually don't get that channel, ironically enough. Ole Miss and Vandy actually play on ESPN as well.
Right.
So that'll be fun.
You said the South Carolina game, I was thinking Thursday night game. Yes, I'll be watching that.
Yeah, let's talk about Oklahoma State and Mississippi State for a second. You graciously came down to my studio last weekend and took me and the kid out to breakfast, and we had a good time. It was fun hanging out, catching up. I got to have a chipping and putting contest, and I appreciate you coming down. I had a lot of fun.
It was kind of nice just chilling, relaxing, and man, I do appreciate a tour of the studio.
how long did it take? Like 10 seconds, 12 seconds, something like that?
Ish, somewhere around in there.
Well, I want to talk about the Oklahoma State Mississippi State game, because we talked about it a little bit this weekend or last weekend, and just kind of talked about how, you know, everybody acts like, oh, OSU's playing an SEC team, it's going to be this really difficult game. And you kind of rejected that notion and said, hey, Mississippi State's not really that good. And you maybe even felt like the line, I think it's 12.5. You felt like that was maybe a little bit low?
Well, I don't necessarily think it's a low line as far as why Vegas would put it there. I think it's a perfect game for Vegas, and they probably love that number because – the first look, you're like, wow, 12.5 points is a lot. But then when I sit here and look at the matchup, I don't think we'll have any problem covering that. So I think that it's a good number for them because they're going to get a lot of people who will take OSU to win, but they'll take the Mississippi State with a point. But I think we're giving people are giving way too much respect to Mississippi State. Maybe it's because of their 7-0 start last year. SEC, we're treating them like a traditional SEC school, which really isn't the case. I was curious to see what some Mississippi State fans had to say in response to just the upcoming game, and then response to some of the players' comments, like Parker Graham And one of them said, why are they acting like they're playing a Georgia, you know, or an SEC championship team? Or like, I don't really know why they're getting so pumped up, fired up about this game. And I think they're right. They're playing a bottom half SEC team, and we're a top, you know, one, two, or three Big 12 team. We should beat them by several touchdowns.
Yeah, it really is true. And I think you're right. I think it's a combination of them being in the SEC. You know, Dan Mullen is kind of a hot name in terms of a coach. And it's, you know, I think the other aspect of it is that it's one of the few games on opening weekend that's actually a legit game. You know, I saw today where Oregon's favored by like 59 over whoever they're playing. And so I think people kind of try to shoehorn these games into being maybe better than they actually are. Like, I don't legitimately think LSU-TCU is going to be a great game. I'm going to probably watch every second of it, but without Devontae Fields and all that, like, I think LSU is going to win pretty, not easily, but I think they're going to win handily. And so I think we try to just like shove all these opening weekend games into like a box and say, hey, these are all going to be great. And, you know, everybody kind of buys into that.
Yeah. Bama Virginia Tech is another one. We like the way that matchup sounds, but come on, when we look at it, we know very well that game is not going to be a close game. It could be a 25-30 point victory for Bama easily.
I saw today where half of Virginia Tech's roster is either, I believe, redshirt freshman or true freshman, which sounds like pretty much the worst idea ever when you're playing Alabama.
Yeah, that's good when you're picking Bama to start your season, right? I saw that same tweet. I think it was guys over at Cowboys Ride for Free. I tweeted, you know, out of 1 to 10, how scared are you about the matchup against Mississippi State? And people, like, it just kind of further proof people are buying into Mississippi State being, like, a legit opponent, which they are to a certain degree, but people were saying, like, 8, 10. There were some, like, sixes, not very many low. I'm just sitting there thinking, how can people think we're going to go 12-0 and then not be extremely confident that we're going to beat Mississippi State? And I don't think it's fair to look at Arizona last year as a comparison, because we were walking into that game knowing we were going to win. You know, we didn't take it that seriously. And this is a completely different story. When you look at, I mean, how fired up our players are to prove themselves against an SEC team, which I don't think it proves anything no matter how well you beat Mississippi State. It's not the same situation as when we went in and got beat up by Arizona.
Yeah, I agree. I was actually talking to Jimmy Trammell of the Tulsa World about this the other day, and he was talking about how Mississippi State played Troy last year, and Troy runs, you know, kind of a spread offense, up-tempo. They do things very fast, very quickly. And Mississippi State should have lost that game. Troy had 4 turnovers in the first half and still almost beat Mississippi State. And I think it was like the second game of the year last year. And so, you know, people, yeah, I mean, we talked again last weekend about how Mississippi State starts 7-0 last year. Well, the three team, and this is the stat that you mentioned to me, the three SEC teams that they beat were like a combined 3-29 in the conference. And so you're like, well, what exactly does that 7-0 mean? And you're playing teams out of conference that aren't that good. So I'm with you. I think if you don't beat Mississippi State, you have to kind of turn around and say, I don't know if this is a 9 or 10 win team. You know, like it might be more like a 7 win team if you don't beat Mississippi State.
At best 7, because I could probably, there's probably plenty of teams on our schedule in conference that are better than Mississippi State. And we don't know exactly how good they are, but we can get a pretty good idea based on how they've, played recently. I mean, I always look at the previous season and I know things change, but kind of like you said, if they struggled against Troy and they return some of their key players, and even if they return the same players, they're the same players that struggled against Troy. So that's returning players is not always we're going to be better scenario.
Yeah.
You like to think that. But yeah, you look, I mean, they lost to Northwestern. They've got a good team right now. They lost Ole Miss. I mean, these are teams that you would expect an SEC, worthy opponent to be. And I just can't give Mississippi State that much credit.
Yeah, I agree. And of course, we're projecting this based on what we saw last year, what we've been reading, stats, a bunch of summer stuff, essentially. And so, hey, they might come out and throw up, 21 points in the first quarter and it'd be like the Baylor game from last year all over again. But, I kind of don't think that's going to happen. Did you see the post on Cowboys Ride for Free today that they interviewed the Mississippi State blogger and he said that Oklahoma State would, I think his words were something like Oklahoma State would struggle to score 30 points against the Bulldogs.
No, he probably thinks we sound ridiculous right now, but I've got to say that that's pretty ridiculous in itself. When I look at the teams that put up 30 points against them last year, like what's different? How did he defend that statement? I did not read the post.
Well, I kind of just jumped out of it after that. Cause I'm like, okay, I don't know how seriously I can take you, but how many teams I feel like there's only like 3, 4, 5, maybe 8 legit teams that would hold Oklahoma State under 30 points. I mean, I don't feel like that's an absurd statement, is it?
No, I don't think it is at all. I mean, the system has worked against, most teams out there. Mississippi State's not an exception to that. I wouldn't think. I haven't watched film on them to see how good their defense is, but when I think Northwestern put up 37 against them, and I don't know. I don't have all the scores from last year, but it didn't appear that teams with good offenses or even just decent offenses struggled to score.
Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, we're getting too heavily into the breaking down this game this weekend. We need to jump into something else. Did you see the headline or article in the Oklahoman on Monday? Where Marcel Adaman for Oklahoma State was referenced as he reminds people of Dez.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I said today. I forget this is probably going to air like on Thursday. So yes, Monday. I did see that.
And your thoughts?
Okay, the same thoughts I have when I hear Gundy say that we've got the best defensive tackles that he's ever had at OSU. I mean, okay, like, I will believe you whenever it happens. Because to compare somebody to Dez is, I'm not going to say it's just a ridiculous statement because he's seen him in practice every day. Who said, was that, who made that comment? Parker Graham? Or?
Yeah, it was Parker Graham.
Okay, I mean, maybe it's just easy to point to Dez because he's the most memorable. Him, I mean, among a couple other guys at receiver. But now saying he reminds him of Dez is not the same thing to say he's the next Dez Bryant. So I guess I'll give him that.
Yeah, I just think that we take these guys that are, I feel like when Herschel Sims came in a couple of years ago, you could have found somebody that said, hey, he reminds me of a little bit of Thurman Thomas, something just ridiculous. And it's like, well, let me see like a game, much less a season from him first before we start throwing names and comparisons around. It just kind of bugs me. And it's not like, it's not a big deal in the grand scheme of things, but I don't like people, just tossing around names where they don't really need to be tossed around. I don't feel like.
This is like a sacred name for some OSU fans, including us.
Yeah, and
don't make crazy statements. This is going to be backed up.
Well, I have more of an issue with that than I do even like a throwing Blackman around, because like, I don't know, maybe it's just because I was there when Dez played, and I mean we were both there when Dez was playing there, but I don't know. It's just a thing for me. Like I don't like people just tossing that around and we're speaking of Blackman and Dez, where do you stand on the historical, would you rather have Blackman or Dez argument?
Dez. That's pretty simple.
Really?
For us. I know. I think so. I mean, come on. We've watched Dez. Like, how electric he is and how much of a game changer he is. I mean, punt returns is just a complete bonus with him. I mean, who would you rather see the fade thrown to? I mean, we've said it many times. Could you imagine if I mean, yeah, Blackman was outstanding. But would you have rather had Dez in that offense with Whedon, or would you rather have Blackman?
Well, the all-time what if is what if?
Yeah, if he stayed and Blackman.
But add to it that Broyles. That would have been Broyles' senior year if he had come to Oklahoma State. So you would have been lining up Blackman, Broyles, and Dez in the same. That's your starting lineup of receivers with Whedon throwing to him, that's a joke. But, you know, I think I love Zach Robinson. Like, I thought he was great. I thought for where we were as a program, I mean, he was awesome. Like, he was a good leader. He was a good quarterback, but he wasn't Whedon. And he made throws to Dez that, I feel like Dez made him look really good, whereas Whedon maybe made Blackman look a little bit better than he was. You know, I feel like those things kind of get discounted when you're just looking at individual guys. I remember Zach threw a pass to Dez in the 60-41 game, and I think it was 08 Bedlam, the Bradford helicopter game. And it was like a 30-yard pass to the end zone, and he way underthrew him, and Dez had to turn around in the end zone, come back, and basically catch it off the ground, and then fall backward into the end zone. I think it was probably the best catch I've ever seen Dez make. And he did stuff like that all the time. And you didn't see Blackman having to make a ton of really difficult catches with Whedon throwing to him.
No, but I agree with what you say as far as Dez making Zach look good. But I wouldn't go as far as say Whedon made Blackman look good. I think that was pretty much just two very talented guys just making plays. I think you take a little bit of credit away from Blackman when you say that Whedon made him look good. Whedon made great throws, but he was able to make some great throws in tight spots because Blackman could make the play.
Is it fair to say that Whedon made Bo Bowling look good?
Whedon made every other receiver look good. Blackman was great. It's just whenever I just look back and like what I remember seeing from both of them on the field, I would just take Dez.
Yeah. No, I agree. And so we don't need to – I thought we were going to have more, like, arguments and debate this year, you know? Like, I thought you were going to pick a side and kind of argue with me a little bit.
I probably will, but that's one I've stood behind pretty firmly, and I'm not going to change just for the sake of the argument. But I wasn't expecting our preseason, you know, game week podcast. We'd have to get into – Dez versus Blackman.
Okay, let's get back to speaking of the preseason. I want to talk a bit about the Big 12. We got to talk about our projections for the year. I don't want to go through the whole thing. I don't like doing that. I do want to get your top three and then kind of a coach of the year and player of the year stuff. But first of all, your top three, the way they finish in the Big 12 this season.
Oh, you know, I picked my top three, but in order to give it to you in order, I probably would have to go through and play it all out. But I'm going to OSU to win it, and you know, I don't always make the homer pick, but I am going to take OSU to win the conference. Then I'm going to put right behind them, I'm going to go with Texas, and then following up with Baylor.
Okay, I've got the same top three. I've got Texas winning it. I've got Oklahoma State finishing second, and most of that is just based on the fact that we play them in Austin, and I think that, you know, that could be the deciding game in the Big 12 race. And then I've got Baylor also in third. I actually hate it, but I think Baylor's going to be really good this year.
I think they're at a point in their offense or really close to it that it's just like ours, like it's. You know, get me somebody who can sling it around, and we've got some playmakers around because they do. They're continuing to bring in talent that can be plugged into that offense, and they're going to put up points.
Yeah, and we talked about
that.
And
the defense is what, defense is what it is. It's terrible. So they can't win every single game, or most likely won't win every single game based on that offense, but it's going to be good enough to give them a shot in every game. You know, maybe two or three games that their defense lets them down.
Yeah, and we talked about that last weekend about how I don't think there's a team in the Big 12 this year that I maybe trust more than Baylor, which sounds really weird because you're like, wait, you know, what is Baylor really like? Yeah, I mean, they're like, you know what you're getting from their offense. You just do. Like, it's like Oklahoma State. It's become this thing that, I mean, it's just automatic almost. And like you said, they don't need they're exactly how OSU was in like 2010. They just have a worse defense, but they don't need a great defense. They need an opportunistic defense, and they just need some stops, you know? And I think you look at their defense and people will say, oh, Baylor and Oklahoma State kind of have the same defenses and whatever. And that's not really true because, yeah, if you look at traditional stats, they both give up a ton of yards, a ton of points. But as we've been over, like, that's what you do when you score a lot. You give up a ton of yards and a ton of points. But Baylor doesn't create turnovers. They're not efficient in their drives. They give up a bunch of yards per drive. And they're just not where OSU's defense is. If they ever get one that is, you know, kind of where OSU's is at, they're going to be really good. Like, so yeah, I think Baylor is, I mean, I think they're a top three team in the Big 12 this year. It surprised me that they got picked so low, in the preseason poll, just because there aren't any really known, you know, quantities in the Big 12. So why not pick the offense that you're most confident in, that you're most comfortable with?
Right, and that's why I would put them in the top three over anybody else. I trust their offense. I don't trust their defense to necessarily be confident in putting them in first or second. But it's tough to say it. And I know we both hated after how we've hated, you know, commented on Baylor in the past, but they're definitely a legit contender this year. And I don't think that's going to go away. And anytime soon.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Art Briles is great. I don't think he's going to Texas like a lot of people have talked about. I think he's going to be at Baylor for a while, and I think they're going to be, you know, a good team for a while. So, you know, good thing if you're a Baylor fan. I don't know why, if you're a Baylor fan, you're listening to this podcast, but if you are, then congratulations, because your team is good and will continue to be good.
Yes. Okay. Those are our top three. What else?
Who did you? One of the questions, and this is a little kind of Big 12 national college football picks that you, me, OKC, Dave, and Carson, and also Nolan do every year. And I think it's going to come out. I think it's going to run on. I think I'm actually probably going to try to run it on Tuesday, along with this podcast. So hopefully they'll kind of come out at the same time. But another question that was on there that I wanted to talk about is who you had as your best coach in the Big 12.
I kind of took, and again, I'm not one to always make the homer picks, but right now I really say Gundy. And I say that because, I mean, I'm not, overall, when you look at collectively what coaches have done, he wouldn't be in the top three. But I mean, he's had some decent recruiting classes, but he's taken, you know, those like middle of the road guys and made them stars in his system. And he's really learned to take more of a hands-off approach on the offense. So, I mean, he's obviously still involved there, but he has let go and he's kind of looked at it from the head coaching position, from managing the entire team and letting his coordinators do the work. He's brought in great coordinators and that's under his job. And I really feel like, right now, he's the best coach in the Big 12.
Yeah, I feel like he's really done a good job of kind of ignoring politics and doing what he feels like is best for the program. You know, I think that the opposite of that is maybe a Mac Brown, where it's a lot of it is political and you got to do the Longhorn Network and all this different stuff. And, you know, stuff adds up and it kind of starts hurting your team. And Gundy has just ignored that. I think he's also been given a job in which he can afford to ignore that, because you got Boone kind of just funneling money into the program. So you don't have to do as much talking to boosters and just kind of all the BS type stuff that comes with being a head coach. But I agree with you. He's done a great job. I had Bill Snyder as my best coach in the Big 12. I just feel like, I mean, OSU and Kansas State are similar historically in that they were just so bad at football for a long time. And I just think you look at that program and you know, what he did in the early 2000s with L. Roberson and all those guys, and then to leave and come back. I mean, like, that's the only thing that changed was him leaving and coming back. And they went from being good to bad to really good again. And I just think I mean, clearly he makes a difference. And I think he's a great coach. I do wonder how much longer he'll be on the sidelines for them. Just because, I mean, he's getting old. What he's like in his 70s, isn't he? Like,
Yeah,
what?
He's 73 maybe.
Yeah, like he's old. Like my grandfather's not that much older than him, you know. So I wonder how long he can sustain that. But I think for right now, I think he's the best coach.
I it'd be hard for me to really argue him. I mean, against him or even against. I think you could make a strong case for Briles. Although I could say Briles is at least a step behind Gundy just because of the success that he's had in like the recent years. But yeah, those three would be my top. I mean, not to knock what Stoops has done at OU, but I mean, recently they haven't been overly impressive. So right now I've just got to say, you know what? Gundy is who I'd rather have coaching my team. I've always said Stoops is the best coach in the Big 12. That's, you know, if I could have any other coach in the conference, it'd be him. But I mean, I really wouldn't. I don't think I'd want to switch to Stoops at all over Gundy.
Well, and I think we also kind of prorate these rankings based on the kind of recruits a school traditionally gets. I mean, I think in our heads we're like, you know, OSU didn't really get that great of recruits, and we've done and they've done really well, so that must be Gundy, you know. And I think that's not a totally fair thing to do, but it is true that, I mean, we talked again last weekend, like OSU they still haven't recruited traditional 4- and 5-star guys. Like they've been in the 20s and the 30s rankings wise for recruiting, and yet, you know, finish in the top 10 and top 20 in the polls at the end of the year. So I think we do base our coaches' rankings on what they did with what they got. I mean, do you agree with that?
Yeah, and I would say that it's probably fair to do that. Maybe not as a complete, like the only criteria we use, but yeah, I mean, you've got to give credit to him for recruiting and finding players that, you know, don't have like the big names and the big schools chasing them. So you kind of find those, you know, diamonds in the rough, or you take those guys and you either develop them or you've created a system that it's easier to plug those types of guys in for them to succeed and have a successful team. So I would think any way you look at it, it definitely is a tribute to Gundy's coaching.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, a last little note on the Big 12 coaches here. I think Mack Brown is really overrated. I mean, you go back and look at the kind of players he's got and the kind of talent that he's brought in. They've only won the Big 12, like, I think twice. I think they won it once with Vince Young and then once with Colt at quarterback. And, I mean, that's not very good. OU's won it like 8 or 9 times, and Texas has only won it twice with the guys that they've had. I just feel like that's,
wow.
I feel like that's poor. I feel like, you know, and I've talked about this with a bunch of people. I don't know if I've talked about it with you, but if I'm Texas, there is not a number that I would not pay Nick Saban to come in and run the program.
They love that. I don't really know. Yeah, who knows what Saban would say to any number, it'd be a money deal for him, or maybe he just gets bored of dominating the SEC. I don't really know how a move to Texas would change that for him. But, yeah, I mean, Mack Brown is overrated. I don't think that's a secret. I think it's a very popular opinion among a lot of people. I mean, he built Texas back up, but, I mean, I'm not impressed with Tech. They don't look like they're a team that brings in like all the best talent. And now they're not going to be getting all the talent with Baylor becoming more of a factor. A&M's going to be dominating the recruiting in Texas a lot more now. And
Tech.
TCU is going to be more competition. So I don't see things getting any better for Mac.
Yeah, I didn't mean to spring that Saban thing on you, but I read an article on the Big Lead a couple weeks ago just about, you know, could this happen? I mean, Texas is one of the few teams that could say, hey, name your number. Like what if Texas went to Saban and said, hey, here's $25 million a year? Like, first of all, that's not too high of a number to pay him. Like, he's worth that based on what you would bring in by winning the titles that you would win.
If you're Texas, yeah.
Yeah, and well, that's what I was going to say. Second of all, like, they're one of the two or three or four teams that could legitimately justify saying, hey, here's 25 mil for our football coach because of the profit that they generate from their athletic program. Like, if you're South Carolina, well, that's probably a bad example. If you're Kansas State and you say, hey, Saban, here's 25 mil, I don't know that you can justify that based on how much profit you made. I don't know how much profit Kansas State made, but I'm guessing it's not enough to cover 25 mil for a football coach. But you can do that if you're Texas, and I don't know why you wouldn't. Like, that, I don't know. It makes sense to me, but I hope they don't. Like, that would be really bad for Oklahoma State.
No, it'd be terrible. All you got to do is look, if you're Texas, try to look at the numbers in your successful seasons, going to the title game, winning the title game. Kind of compare that to, you know, how is fundraising going? How are things going with your boosters when things were going well? And then compare it to how they've been the past couple of years. You know, I mean, it winning makes all the difference. People are a lot more likely to empty their bank accounts with a lot more W's. That's just, I mean, that's obvious. But I agree. I mean, why not just throw all you can at them? And you're right. For a few schools, handful of schools, he's worth it.
Yeah, no, it's true. Okay, let's finish up here with your Big 12 Player of the Year, and I'll let you go first and give me your Big 12 Player of the Year for this year.
Way too much Baylor love for me in one podcast, or even maybe for a whole season. But I'm going with C. Strunk, and not necessarily just because of that one run he had against us in that game, but when he started getting all the carries towards the end of the year, I mean, he was putting up some pretty big numbers, and we've seen how well running backs can do in a spread offense like that. I mean, our running backs have had crazy good success, and then you throw him in there in Baylor's offense. I think that's just one more reason their offense is going to be that scary.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's the real deal. This is unbelievable because I have Bryce Petty as my Big 12 Player of the Year, the quarterback for, well, as Gundy would call him, the Baylor quarterback, or whatever 12 or whatever his number is.
And he really likes the game of football.
I think, you know, to me, I don't know. That's very much like a system-y pick. It's like take the best quarterback in the best offensive system and you know, say they're going to be Big 12 Player of the Year. But the problem is that I can't pick the OSU quarterback because I don't really know, you know, which guy is going to put up. I don't even know who's playing. You know, let's be honest about that.
Very well, it could be Chelfer Walsh, but like you said, we don't know how many snaps each of those guys is going to take.
Yeah, and I, you know, it could be Paul Hall from TCU, or, you know, I don't know what, I mean, obviously Blake Bell's not going to play, but, it, you know, is OU going to continue to put up, I don't know, there's a lot of unknown in the Big 12 this year, so to me the safest pick is the best player in the best, or the most consistent player in the best offensive system, And to me, that's Petty for Baylor. So before we go, I did want to ask you about the two quarterback thing. I know we talked a lot about that as well, but just get your thoughts. I mean, does this work? Like is this a? I think everybody can agree that a two quarterback system generally is a bad idea. But is this a unique enough situation that you feel like it works out for Oklahoma State?
I think it can work. I don't like it. I really don't like it at all. I mean, to say that it can, I haven't seen that tried in our offense that we've had the past, you know, 4 or 5 years. And gosh, I don't know. It's hard for me to picture it not working just because it runs so smoothly. Both of the guys know the offense. It's just, I just don't see the point of it. If one guy can can run it better than the other, then he's got to be the one to play. I mean, apparently they're just completely 50-50. I find that hard to believe. Surely there's got to be one that's more suitable for the type of offense that you want to run. And I feel like that's the guy you should go with.
Well, it's like even if they are 50-50, just pick one. Like Gundy has historically said that he hates two quarterback systems. That was in the Oklahoman this morning. I think it was a quote in Barry Trammell's article. And it's like, well, I feel like he's acted like somebody forced his hand, that he has to play both these guys. He said he felt obligated to do it. And I'm like, you're the one making $3.75 million. Like, just pick one, like make a decision and roll with it. Like, and that's the thing. If you start Chelf and he doesn't play well, or he throws two picks in the first half against Mississippi State or whatever, it's not like the season's over. Run Walsh out there and hey, he's got the job if he can keep it. And maybe that's what they'll do. I don't know, but it just seems weird and gimmicky and not something that a Big 12 title contender should be doing.
Ryan, I do not believe that he is obligated. He's not obligated in any way to play both quarterbacks. I agree with you. Like, I guess need more clarification on what this, you know, two quarterback system is actually going to be like. You know, we were talking the other day. Does that mean every other series you just switch quarters, halves? I mean, if you throw Walsh out there and the offense is running smoothly, we're at 14 points in the first quarter. Are you telling me you're obligated to bring in Chelf now, or how does that work? I don't really know what is going through his mind, and I don't even know if I really believe that he's, you know, going to go with a two quarterback system. I mean, a whole lot can change from what he says up until Saturday, whenever offense takes the field for the first time, and he may just decide to stick with one, whoever that is.
Yeah, I agree, and you know, I've been very pro Chelf starting all along, but I mean, I would even be okay if he said, hey, Walsh is our guy, we're rolling with him, and Chelf's the backup. I'd rather that than the two quarterback thing. I don't think it works. Maybe it will. You know, I'm really curious. I think that's probably the thing that I'm most curious about in terms of Saturday is what does this look like? How's this going to work? And the biggest, like the overall biggest thing for me is I want to know right now, and I wrote this the other day, I want to know if we're down six at West Virginia in a month, who's rolling out there to score a touchdown and win the game. I want to know that right now. I want everybody on OSU's team to know that right now. And I want West Virginia to know that right now. Like, this whole like secrecy and just all this stuff, I think it's kind of silly and it gets old and it's like, hey, let's just line it up and play, which thankfully we're going to get to do on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't really buy that there's a whole, you gain an advantage by keeping this quiet. I mean, I know you don't really gain anything by telling everybody who's starting. Maybe the team knows, I don't know. And Stoops kind of did the same thing recently. He was asked if he was going to, you know, continue to use like Bell and their Belldozer package. And he said, well, I don't want to tip my hand or something like that. And I'm like, well, that, for one, it's a dumb question because just assume yes. And if he doesn't, okay. I mean, I'm sure any team's going to expect to see him out there because it was so effective. It's like, why does it have to be a secret? And I also don't know why it also has to be known to the world. But I agree with you. I think that you want the team to know. Like, you definitely want your team to know who's going to be leading you. I mean, your quarterback is the leader of your team. And if they're just kind of like, all right, this guy, this guy. All right, let's just go with Walsh. Okay, we're following Chelf now. I'm not a fan.
Yeah, we could do a whole other podcast about this, but let's wrap it up. Maddie, I appreciate you coming on. Be safe on the road, and we will do it again next week after hopefully Oklahoma State's 1-0.
Absolutely, man. 41-20, folks.
Okay, I like that. I'm going to save my prediction, I think, for the blog later on this week, but appreciate you throwing that out there.
Yeah, I might change it, but right now that's what I'm going to go with.
Okay, we'll talk to you later.
All right, man.
Okay.